Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, the unscripted show that celebrates unsung heroes, myth busts historical lies, and rediscovers the forgotten stories that changed our world. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Hi, everyone. Welcome to History Unplugged. Today is a short episode where I answer any question that you can throw at me. Today's question comes from Peter Swanson. Here's what he asks. My question is, what is the history of salting the earth after a military victory? And how would they have transported tons and tons and tons of salt and spread it everywhere? Isn't that a waste of time? Good question, Peter. Here's the thing that you're referring to. This phrase, salting the earth or sowing with salt, it's a ritual of spreading salt on conquered cities that symbolize a curse on their re-inhabitation. It was a symbolic practice in the ancient Near East and became a folkloric motif in the Middle Ages. The idea that you curse a land so that nothing on it can ever grow again. So although this is a common motif, and although, of course, salt can be toxic to crops and prevent their growth, there isn't any evidence to show that any conquering nation applied sufficient amounts of salt to render large amounts of land unusable. Now, there are legends about the earth being salted after a victory. And I should mention that in the ancient world, there are lots of recorded accounts of things that us today seem superstitious and maybe even a little bit ridiculous. One famous example that Herodotus mentions is the Persian emperor Xerxes, who in 483, he sets out to conquer the Greek mainland. He wanted to attack Greece to avenge the failure of his father Darius, who lost a major battle against the Greeks at Marathon about a decade earlier. In order to get his army over Greece by land, he had to build a bridge over a strait of water called the Hellespont. His engineers started building the bridge, but before it was finished, a terrible storm came and destroyed all the progress they had made. Xerxes was so upset at what happened that he had every engineer beheaded, then sent soldiers down to the banks of the strait and actually had them whip the sea 300 times for its failure to obey him and comply with his plans. Now the question is this true? He sounds like an idiot. That's what a modern would say. But a historian tries to make sense of that story. First of all, they'd think, well, it's written by Herodotus, a Greek, so of course he has an anti-Persian bent and will portray them as superstitious and unintelligent. But maybe Xerxes figures, I suffered a humiliation, so I have to show a symbolic showing of strength so that my troops aren't demoralized and don't want to continue on this long and dangerous expedition. Maybe he did so out of that practice, and as any ancient ruler, he probably did have a fair amount of superstition as well. Now that gives you some of the context at where a practice like salting the earth can come from. Let's talk about a famous example of salting the earth. Starting in the 19th century, there were various texts that claimed that the Roman general Scipio Africanus plowed over and sowed the city of Carthage with salt once it defeated it in the Third Punic War in 146 BC. But no ancient sources document the salting itself. The story is a later invention. That twist might have originated with the 19th century German historian Ferdinand Gregorovius. He mentions it in his History of the City of Rome in the Middle Ages. Ferdinand's contemporary, Theodore Mommsen, says that the Roman Senate ordered the site of Carthage to be plowed under, but even that is debatable because Carthage was repopulated after a century and a thriving Roman city by then. Now, there are cases of salting the earth on a smaller scale. In Spain and the Spanish Empire, salt was poured onto the land owned by a convicted traitor. This is one who was executed and had his head placed on a pike afterwards and his house was demolished. And in Portugal, salt was poured onto the land owned by a convicted traitor as well. The last known event of this sort was the destruction of the Duke of Aveiro's palace in Lisbon in 1759 because he was involved in a conspiracy against King Joseph I of Portugal. His palace was demolished and his land was salted. There is a stone memorial that perpetuates the memory of the Duke that says, "In this place were put to the ground and salted the houses of José Mascarenhas, stripped of the honors of Duke de Aveiro and others, put to justice as one of the leaders of the most barbarous and execrable upheaval that was committed against the most royal and sacred person of the Lord Joseph I. In this infamous land, nothing may be built for all time. Now, salt in the earth has questionable efficacy because I live in the Midwest and we frequently have to salt our roads in winter. Salt easily washes off. Once salt gets into soil, rainwater can cause that to wash away and the soil can replenish itself. So there's really no way that you could salt ground so heavily that it would be unable to grow anything for all time, particularly if the salted ground in question is part of an ecosystem that's fertile and the surrounding land has plenty of rainwater and plenty of crops that can move back into it and replenish the soil. Now, Cecil Adams did crunch some of the numbers on this to see what would it take to actually salt the earth and cause crop failure with somebody. Today, it is surprisingly affordable. Now, let's make some assumptions that a 75% yield of crops equals crop failure, and the salt would have to be sown to a depth of 1 foot. You need about 31 tons of salt per acre in order for the land to be toxic. You can get rock salt for about $50 a ton, so figure $1,500 per acre for materials. That's a pretty cheap way in order to expunge all trace of your enemy from the face of the earth. But again, a well-watered climate will leach the salt out of the soil pretty soon, and it'll be recoverable in a few years. So to answer your question, Peter, it might be possible to salt the earth, but it's not economic. Destroying a city is way easier. If you did, it would be back in a few years anyway. So it sounds nice, but it wasn't a regular practice. Well, that's our question for today. If you would like to submit a question to me on anything about history, and I mean absolutely anything, you can email me at info@historyonthenet.com, or you can go to historyonthenet.com/podcast. There you can leave a voicemail message, and I'll be happy to answer any question that you throw at me. Thanks for listening to the History Unplugged podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get your daily dose of all things history related, from ancient Greece to the Cold War. You can do that by going to historyonthenet.com/subscribe. Speaking of History on the Net, if you want to dive deeper, go to our site, historyonthenet.com, and there you'll find blog posts, book reviews, and all of our other podcast episodes. Plus, don't forget to rate and review this podcast so we can bring you the best daily history content possible. We'll see you next time at the History Unplugged podcast.